A long time ago, on a comics page far, far away. Greetings and welcome to May the Panel Be With You, the Star Wars comic book show brought to you by the Punch Up Entertainment Network. I am your humble host, Mike Gargoni, and joining me, as always, the Justice Star to my Imperial Galactic Senate, it is John Campbell.
Hey everybody. I like that Senate troubled you because they talk about the Senate all the time in Star Wars. Constantly. The most important thing in the universe.
Yeah, well, look, a democracy dies to applause, and that is what we know.
Hey, man, that's legitimately one of the best lines George Lucas has ever written in anything.
This is how democracy dies to thunderous applause.
It's a great line. That's a rare, like, really effective, evocative, cool line from a guy whose dialogue is not one of his strengths.
Yeah, look. We can all basically agree that Revenge of the Sith is the best of the prequels.
Oh, I mean, I accept no other answer. It's everyone's entitled to their opinion, but like from an objective standpoint,
yeah,
that movie really works.
Yeah, movie really works, and like I could even see an argument for like somebody preferring that over like, I mean, obviously this is sacrilege to some ears, but like if it goes like Empire and New Hope, Revenge of the Sith is your favorite. Like Star Wars movies? Like, I don't know. Obviously, everyone has their own opinion.
That actually might be my opinion. The older I've gotten, the more I've cooled on Jedi. I love it. This is my... All right, and this is what people tuned in for. I swear we're going to talk about this now. But this is my stance on when it comes to the trilogy. Jedi nails the big moments. The final Luke Vader stuff, great. A lot of the intricacies of it are weird, though. And... Mm. Mostly Ewok based, but like there are some incredible moments in it, and I love where it lands the series. I do still think it's a great finishing chapter for the broad trilogy, mm-hmm. but it is the weakest of the individual film by far of that trilogy. Mm-hmm.
Interesting,
yeah,
huh? Interesting thought experiment.
Yes,
prequels maybe have the strongest third film.
Yes.
Original trilogy, definitely strongest middle film.
Yes.
Though I could see an argument for Last Jedi, depending on your opinions of things.
Oh, no, sorry. You said sequel trilogy?
The original trilogy has best middle picture.
Oh, yes. Yeah. The original trilogy is the best middle picture.
And honestly, like in terms of just grabbing you and pulling you in, Force Awakens is a pretty solid film. Like, obviously, they fumbled after the fact. But
this is where we disagree, because I do think Last Jedi... is like in isolation is maybe the best piece of filmmaking I've seen in the franchise.
Look, and that's fair. I do. You know me. I do like The Last Jedi. I defend that movie, but like
it's good.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Star Wars. Less about Star Wars.
Star Wars before when there was just one prequel movie when this came out.
Right. This movie had only seen the appearance, or this comic book had only seen the appearance of the Phantom Menace.
Right.
Because we are talking about issue number 3 of Star Wars Infinities, A New Hope. This is the what if Star Wars book, the alternate reality, the darkest timeline. It's really not, but,
it is though.
It is and it isn't.
It wants to be. Oh, it wants to be so bad.
Yeah,
there's a lot of ambition in this book, which I which I do appreciate. And as we said, I think the stumbling blocks come more from editorial than the creative team on the book.
Yeah, this issue was originally released in September of 2001, so a little bit before a certain number of clones would attack.
Yeah, unclear exactly how many it was, but we do know they attacked.
Well, they had 100,000 units ready to go with 3 million more on the way. So, you know.
So it's not unclear. You know,
like, there were some clones, man. Like, the Battle of Geonosis was not fought with the Republic at its height, but they were certainly ready to go.
You want to talk about just individual parts? That battle fucking rules. The third act, Attack the Clones, rules.
Look, once we get out of the droid factory, I would say from then on in that movie, it's smooth sailing.
Oh, God, it's so good. It's so good. Last, like, half hour of that movie, rocks. No question. Infinities, though. Of course, and this is the Infinities for New Hope, which, of course, begs the question, what if Luke Skywalker had not destroyed the Death Star with his final X-Wing shot?
Yeah, indeed. What if a glitch in the system, an IT issue, caused Luke Skywalker to not be the hero of the Battle of Yavin? Yeah.
I didn't program the torpedo correctly. Sorry, boss.
Somewhere there is a rebel techie who's just like, oh, I fucked up.
Thank God the base was destroyed afterwards, else they would have tracked it back to me.
But Flight Commander, we have this batch of faulty photon torpedoes. Throw it in the new kid's X-Wing. What is he going to do?
He's probably going to die anyway, so whatever. That arm kid, he's not even going to get a shot off. Throw him in there. Oops.
Obviously, you save the best torpedoes for Porkins. He'll get the job done.
Oh, Porkins. Porkins is our boy. all right. Not a Porkins inside in this. He still is dead in this.
He's still super dead. We've got a slightly different creative team for this issue. We've still got Chris Warner as our writer, though we've replaced our penciler with Al Rio, is now on art for this and the final issue as well.
I think I like him more.
Yeah, a little bit. I like the detail that he puts into his characters. We'll get into it once we start talking about the art. But we've also got Neil Nelson on inks, Dave McCraig on colors, Steve Dutrow on letters. Our cover artist is, again, Tony Harris, with Chris Blythe as cover colorist.
Tony Harris's covers are awesome. I love Tony Harris's covers.
Yeah, let's get to this cover, because it is a cover that speaks to something that happened last issue.
That is the thing, and I know, I mean, one of the weirdest things, I don't think people who aren't maybe up in the world of comics as much as we are, which is not necessarily a thing to brag about, so don't take that as an ego thing, but the production of comic books, oftentimes the covers are created before the issues are even written, or just sort of a vague idea of what's going to happen in them, so that's why sometimes, actually frequently, you'll see a cover and then read the book and go, that had nothing to do with this, like, because they're soliciting the covers before anything. Like, covers are huge, especially in the comics collector's market, obviously.
Well, and in this particular book, we've often talked about in the last two issues how it feels like the issue-to-issue distinctions of this book are way softer than we've seen in any other book we've read in the show, let alone just, like, the comics we read in general.
Right, right.
So where the issues begin and end, especially in these middle chunks, feels arbitrary almost.
Yes.
And especially for me, who's reading them in a like trade paperback copy that doesn't differentiate when the issues begin or end, I couldn't tell you where any of these issues started or stopped. It doesn't read that way.
No, I mean, the biggest thing, the bigger indication of jumping from issue 2 to 3 is just the art change.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the only real giveaway. But even then, like, it's subtle enough. And we've talked about before that Dark Horse sort of had this house style-ish.
Yeah. Yeah, there were, I said, particularly when it comes to the coloring and inking, I think more so than the pencils.
Mm-hmm. So, but that speaks to a good, like, artist who changes over midway series. If it's close enough of an approximation that it's not going to be off-putting, but it's distinct enough that you can still tell it's a different artist.
Yes. No, it works. And let's talk about this cover, though, which is, of course, the iconic scene of Luke in the cave. It is weird to see this is the New Hope one, and it's such Luke's outfit from Empire. This scene from Empire, it's very interesting, but it is sort of the ghostly vision of Vader swiping his lightsaber through basically, I guess you would say Vader's the non-corporeal form here.
I suppose, but he is chopping that branch in half, so I would argue that Luke is not.
Luke is the non-corporeal form, which is actually makes no sense, but that's all right.
No.
All right, you guys.
Let's not think about the logic of covers. We'll be here all day.
The logic doesn't make much sense, but the art is cool. I love the way the trail of the lightsaber blade coming through, the fiery ignition of Luke's, like the way that the flame bursts out from the bottom of the hilt and then turns into the blade. So cool. And once again, the lighting. I love all the glow of the lightsabers.
I love that Vader kind of has a spawn cape in this. This cover.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No question about that.
Ori's cloak from Cloak and Dagger, because you just have his gauntleted fist emerging out of the darkness.
I got to look up Tony Harris and see what he worked on. Oh, he drew Ex Machina, the Brian K. Vaughan comic.
Oh, cool.
Love that comic.
Yeah, great comic.
He also worked on the legendary Starman run with James Robinson over. He's a pretty big name.
Well, I'm glad he got paid making these covers, because we know that's where the money is in comics.
I'll just say this though, don't look up his Wikipedia.
Okay, will do.
Mm-hmm.
Bit of a problematic individual. Okay, moving on.
Focus on the art. Just focus on the art.
Okay. Well, we're moving on from Tony Harris right now. As we get in, I forgot to mention Dave Land, of course, being the editor on this book.
Yeah. Who once again,
longtime Star Wars editor on Dark Horse stuff.
Yeah. We'll focus in on this. So yeah, we get our nostalgic titles, and immediately we're in a totally different setting than we're familiar with, a Mos Eisley-esque
hard cut to Ord Mantell.
Yeah. Is this a place you're familiar with from other stuff? That name does sound familiar.
That's because Han Solo mentions it in Empire Strikes Back.
There you go.
He specifically says when they're on Echo Base in Hoth, those bounty hunters we ran into on Ord Mantell made me realize I needed to go pay off Jabba.
So this is a similar, once again, it's sort of the going back to what we presumably did happen. To some extent, except for it's a little bit different. So Han and Chewie are in this hive of scum and villainy. Love the alien dancers in cages. And is this a Watto-esque creature that's floating and ogling them?
Maybe. I don't know. Tough to say. It's definitely not a Toydarian. It's not built the same way. It's got a weird, like, rabbit build to it. I'm not sure what's going on there.
Yeah, the haunches and the weird little wings.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, Han and Chewie are trying to figure out what to do next. Because it's now 5 years later.
Yeah, so here's... Again, reading this in trade paperback form... This book really kicks it into high gear in this issue when we suddenly like turn a page and like, what? It's 5 years later and there's no caption to say that. It's just we pick it up in the dialogue.
Right. Wild. I mean, I still even was pretty struck just going from, because I was reading we've been doing these last few together. So I was reading this one to one last night. So I just went right from issue 2 into 3 and it was like, whoa. Can you believe? And even Han being like, has it really been 5 years, Chewie? Yeah. Jesus. I mean, that's farther. We're in where Return of the Jedi would be then, right?
Correct. Yes.
Yeah. Because what's interesting about, as we were talking about in the last episode, what's interesting about the New Hope Infinities is it actually goes into sort of rejiggering Empire Jedi as much.
Correct. Yeah. Because the event that it what ifs is at the very end of A New Hope, you're not even really doing a what if of A New Hope, right?
Right. Right. Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. It's very much like one of the strongest what if questions to come out of A New Hope, but it does make me curious about what you could do with an earlier splinter point in that story.
Yeah. It is interesting. They're looking at this, something you don't see in Star Wars very much. They're basically watching TV.
Yeah, news broadcasts like exist in Star Wars. It's a thing that is usually only ever covered in ancillary material like comic books and sometimes in novels.
I don't think we've ever seen it realized on screen, have we?
Rebels.
And, yeah, that's right. Actually. That is true. Because there's the whole thing about breaking into broadcasts on Rebels, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's that. But so anyway, they hear about, it's the fifth anniversary of the end of the rebellion. And you know, they're going to have the celebration on Coruscant. But uh-oh, here come some stormtroopers. Look natural, Han says.
Yeah, in the insert panel, as we continue on with the news, as we see, celebrations are underway to commemorate another year of peace in the galaxy, and not only to celebrate peace and prosperity brought by the Empire, but to christen the formation of the new Imperial Senate.
All about the Senate, man. But I do love this military parade with the AT-ATs and the AT-STs and all the fleets of soldiers and the guys on the speeder bike. Those are some high flying. I think it's the highest I've ever seen a speeder bike fly.
Yeah, there's always like a vague question about just like how high up off the ground are hovering vehicles?
Right, because
can they hover?
The land speeder and the speeder bikes, you know, it's generally like just off the ground, right?
Couple of feet, yeah.
Yeah,
but
are control, yeah.
In Attack of the Clones,
mm-hmm.
we see the traffic in Coruscant,
which is everybody's flying like Blade Runner.
Yeah. And all of the speeders in there are up off the ground.
True. Ah, that's weird.
So presumably they can control it, I guess.
Well, that's another thing I have to know is like where, I mean, especially the speeder bike is so simple. It's basically just the two handles.
Mm-hmm.
So is one of those then controlling the height at which you're like, is there like an engine under you or some kind of repulsor or something that's going?
I would assume.
Weird. Once again, it's a made up fantasy about space wizards, but I still have questions.
Sure. but yeah, we have this big military parade on Coruscant. The news is showing us,
so cool.
And we cut to Nazi Leia.
Nazi Leia in front of a Nazi sign, that Nazi flag, and not full on, but damn close to a Heil Hitler.
Yeah, because we have the news broadcast continuing. Senatorial delegations from across the galaxy have begun to arrive. A number of senators took their time from their busy schedules to review Imperial peacekeeping forces. The delegates' host is an appointed senator from the Imperial Throne World, former rebel leader Leia Organa.
Just number one, it's interesting, of course, to see Leia as part of the Empire, but it's also interesting, as we were talking about in the last issue where Vader was talking about, we need to secure the future of the Empire. The idea that they realized, though they were bragging about destroying, disbanding the Senate, New Hope, here we are 5 years later and they're going, okay, well, we do need some form of government.
Yeah, and specifically whether or not Leia's the one like on the inside pushing for that is an interesting question that this book doesn't super answer, but on this page we have Leia like giving an address to the assembled Imperial armies being like, I know I was a rebel leader, but the Empire has forgiven me, even if I will not forgive myself, and I will help to heal the grisly wounds that
We all have parts of our past we're not proud of, okay? I got a little rebellious, maybe more rebellious than others. but she's basically talking about this whole idea about like now that look, it's over though. We've done it. Let's now figure out how we're going to make the best future going forward. All right.
The restoring of the Senate is the ultimate expression of the Empire's desire to bind the wounds of war.
Yeah, we're moving on, man. We're moving on. We're getting back to business.
But when we find out where that Senate is going to be housed, we maybe have a couple more questions because we don't find it out just now. But Leia's cutting in with the Empire now has turned its mighty resources away from building the weapons of war to constructing a bridge to the future of limitless discovery and infinite potential. Long live the new Empire.
Good line. I mean, it certainly speaks to like, hey, man, we got a little genocide-y, but that's behind us. The rebels were out of line. We were out of line. Let's all just move on. All right. We've learned from our mistakes. Let's go into the future. And Han does not like what he's hearing.
Yeah, Han is just like, it's not possible, as he smashes the TV in a very reasonable thing that a sane person would do.
I really like this. This is maybe the most purely Harrison Ford-like Han Solo that's in this comic, is when everybody looks at him and he just goes, big bug. I think I like, you can absolutely hear that in Harrison Ford's voice, right?
Yeah.
And then I just like, I think I got time to go, Chewie. Like, just really, that's really perfect Han Solo voice. And then
we had a couple of bounty hunters being like, was that fucking Han Solo?
I think that was Han Solo. Isn't there still a prize on that guy's head for Jabba the Hutt? And so, yeah, they're running out of there. Han and Chewie are getting out of there. I do like the on stun Jabba wants Solo live, which is, of course, like the carbonite and stuff like that. We know. They're running away.
They run away from some bounty hunters, and they run straight into some stormtroopers.
Who are just always about, man.
I mean, that's what they do. They patrol. They're securing peace, John.
Luckily, as they are peacekeepers. Come on, man. Luckily, though, not a lot of controversial shootings for the stormtroopers, because they never actually hit anybody.
Slash, don't leave witnesses.
And we see that here. More bad shooting as we go to the next page, and Han and Chewie steal this. What is this? It's a cart.
It's basically Jawa. A shopping cart that they steal from some Jawas.
We're a long ways away from the Jawa Express here.
Yeah, and they run the shopping cart into a car full of stormtroopers that are just going, whoa!
Oh, Jesus Christ! You saw that! That guy came out of nowhere!
This is like a fucking minivan. How many stormtroopers are in here? 2, 4, 6, 8. There's like 10 stormtroopers in this freaking car.
All right, someone's going to have to sit on someone's lap. I know it's not comfortable, but we've got to get to the other side of the city.
You're wearing armor. Keep it in the codpiece. Come on.
All right, come on. Don't be weird. Don't make it a thing. That's on you. That's your own issues, all right? So yeah, they crash into this and then run to the Falcon as they're being shot at by stormtroopers. I always love Han Solo in a blaster battle, of course. And I do like that you can skip the pre-flight check joke.
Yeah. Power up the deflectors. We don't want to get chewed up by ground fire, and keep an eye on the starboard vector plate as they shoom out of Ord Mantell.
They are out of there. And then, but they're not out of trouble yet, because now they're being attacked by a fleet of TIE fighters and a Star Destroyer.
Yeah. Long story short, Han says punch it, and they punch it.
Yeah, they do punch it, even though it's like, the ship is not at full functionality, but like, who cares? We just got to get away from this. And they're out of there, man. I do like the continuation of the Falcon always being in some sort of precarious like state of functioning or whatever, right? Like, it's never quite working at optimum levels.
Yeah, no. We get a big, weirdly typefaced Yahoo from Han on this next
Another
page.
Another one, man. Why?
Because he's flying and he's having fun.
I know, but he does. It's like I said, it's just the one. Set a course for Dagobah. Cut to a very Return of the Jedi looking Luke, but on Dagobah.
True. I want to talk, before we get too far into Luke and what's going on there, I want to talk about Han's decision here. This is the weakest part of this Infinities book for me.
Yeah.
Is Han 5 years later,
yeah,
after he had like a 4-day adventure. Admittedly, he spent like 2 months on Dagobah with Luke, but
nothing really. I mean, right, he was like fixing the Falcon and just kind of hanging around.
And in the grand scheme of Han Solo's life, like, okay, he had one real crazy weekend with the Rebels and Luke Skywalker.
Well, Chewie, I was so drunk, I don't remember what we got up to.
5 years later, seeing one broadcast of Princess Leia saying something supportive about the Empire makes him suddenly go, like, we need to find that Jedi kid. We need to burn this shit to the ground.
Yeah, because even, like, in Empire, he's still not, like, 100% on board. It's more like, my friends are rebels and I'm here too. And yeah, I agree with it in principle, but he still like has to run off to go pay Jabba back when they're on Hoth. He still like got a foot out of there. It really isn't until the events of Empire that really solidifies him as a rebel. So,
yeah, and I mean, obviously by Jedi, he has like, oh, it's General Solo now.
Yeah, and like it's a, you know, it does feel like 5 years after that, he would be the most disillusioned with the concept of this. Because now Han is basically gone from, because even still, he was like, well, the Rebel Alliance is up and running and he joins them. This is a Han Solo who's now going to kickstart the rebellion. And that's just not in his character.
No, and he is going to like lead the charge and is looking for allies to rescue Leia or something. And again, this is a guy who hasn't had all the chemistry with Princess Leia.
No, Lord, no. I mean, very little at all. I mean, the most minor flirtations, if it is literally just the events of New Hope up to, and Leia doesn't, I mean, obviously, I think a big reason Leia ends up falling in love with them is him coming back at the end of New Hope. And Leia doesn't have any perspective for that. So.
Yeah, and like, she didn't even give him a medal in this reality.
Nope.
Though I guess that puts Han and Chewie on equal footing now.
Yeah, finally, yeah. I never got a medal in any reality. So.
But yeah, I guess that's my big like point here is that this character turn for Han Solo is completely out of nowhere for me. It really speaks to the editorial mandate of steering things back in a direction that feels more wholesome. Because having like a genuinely heroic turn out of literal nowhere for Han Solo after establishing a 5-year time jump feels absurd.
It should be the inverse of this, which is Luke comes to him and has to convince him again to sign up. And he's like, kid, we already did the, you know, we tried, man, and it didn't work. But that's what they're doing. Anyway. Yeah. Here's Luke floating. And,
floating. He's got some rocks floating. He's got a cloak.
It's the best look he ever had on the franchise anyway, is that all black from Jedi. God, he looks cool.
Where did he find these clothes on Dagobah?
Hey, Yoda's got some sewing abilities here. Also, Yoda, this presupposes the other what if is what if Yoda just was fine? Because, like, Yoda dies of, like, natural causes, right? And, in Jedi. And in this, which is supposed to be right at the same time, he's totally fine.
Well, I mean, he still looks a little more desiccated like he did in Jedi. And, like, obviously he maybe senses his time's running out, considering what happens going forward. But it's never really addressed.
But it just seems like he's actively dying in Return of the Jedi. And here that was something that kind of I blipped on a little bit where I was like, okay.
Well, and also, this is a version of reality where Luke Skywalker never left, so Yoda had better hospice care. Someone was looking out for him this whole time.
Maybe that's the thing. He was making sure he was taking his meds and stuff.
Exactly.
I just want to see Luke putting the pills in that little plastic divider for days.
Master Yoda, you skipped Friday again. We can't keep having this conversation.
Need medicine? I do not. No, that's the doctor said the exact opposite. And here's that pill to make you speak in the correct order also.
Like the taste, I don't.
No. Make me, you will not.
Elder abuse this is.
Yeah. And then it turns into a whole trial about for himself. Luke is awesome is basically what this is, right?
Yeah, and Yoda comes up to him and says, calm is your mind. Your ally now, the Force is.
Great stuff, he goes, but you gotta get back in that cave, pal.
I do love this, like, retaking of the cave test. Mm. I find this an interesting concept. Like, in the first instance of the cave, Luke failed because he brought his weapons and his baggage with him, right? And he couldn't really process what the Force was trying to tell him in that trial.
This is true.
But now that he is like a fully with it Jedi, he can go back and retake the test.
And you get that sense in the art, which I think is really good here, of like even the way he enters, this low angle shot of him, looking up at him as he enters the cave with so much more power and confidence than what we know from Empire, right? And the look on his face and that inset.
This is also a Luke that never lost his hand, so he doesn't have the one black glove.
I got two hands, baby. Yeah.
He's got So powerful. Two hands.
Although I do love the black glove look, which is very cool.
True.
And of course, when it's just a robot hand, also is also awesome.
I love Luke handing over his lightsaber here. And Yoda reminding him, a lightsaber is not the only weapon. Leave them all behind.
Very cool. And so, yeah, he goes into the cave. There's Vader, who lights up his lightsaber. But it's not going to happen this time, Vader. No, I'm not playing your game now.
Yeah, Luke dodges out of the way. He's not trying to confront him. He's trying to understand him. And then we get one of the coolest panels in this book, which is Luke being confronted by the history of his lineage, I guess, for lack of a better term.
Which is a little lacking only because episodes 2 and 3 don't exist yet, right? So you would expect a Hayden Christensen Anakin here. But, it is what it is.
Because we get a glimpse of Padme, we get a glimpse of baby Anakin, we get a glimpse of Anakin's mom.
Do we need a Darth Maul that just shows up randomly?
I think the idea is there that, like, Maul is the embodiment of the Sith revenge, and obviously he's, like, the prototype for what the Emperor eventually did to Vader.
True, that's true. I mean, I think, also it's just like he just looks cool.
Also, yeah, just
because he's never not looked rad.
There's a reason they brought him back in the Clone Wars. It's like, yeah, such wasted potential.
He's just way too cool. And Luke shouts no, and then it all goes away, and then Han's just like, "Excuse me, sir," is a weird line for Han, right?
But have you seen a punk kid by the name of Skywalker? And then, also, Han just wandered into this cave.
Dark side cave. What are you going to do? Jesus.
Interesting idea, though, and something this book obviously doesn't explore at all. It's just like, okay, if you're not attuned to the Force,
is this
are you less...
Cave? Yeah.
Yeah. Are you less susceptible to the dark side?
Yeah, maybe. Like, neither side really can get to you if you're really not... It's not a battle of that. You're just a person.
Yeah.
And then is this... This is an Indiana Jones joke, right?
Oh yeah, 100%.
Which I'm not sure how I feel about.
Because, Luke says, look out for the snake. And Han immediately whips out, grabs the snake and says, it's just a little old snake, Luke. Not bothering anybody.
That's also a weird line. A little old snake.
Because, yes, it turns out Han Solo, also played by Harrison Ford, who played Indiana Jones, who hates snakes.
Is that a well-known fact? Do people know that's the same guy?
Maybe.
That's the same guy? What? He's very talented.
Wow.
You welcome a good actor. The guy from Blade Runner. Funny thing.
I think he played the president once, too.
Yeah. Oh, I could see that. but I also love where it's just like, Han's like wanting to jumpstart the rebellion, which is weird. But then he's just like, all right, but hey, it's a cookout with my bros.
Yeah, as Yoda's making soup and Han says, Luke, there's a reason I'm here.
Yeah.
And it's not just Yoda's stew.
Yeah. Which I have missed, though. Yum.
Yummy, yum, yum. In my tum.
Let's just, okay, we have a general idea of what is going on, like what's around on Dagobah and the makeup of it. What's in this stew? Because it's gross.
Lots of bugs.
Yeah.
Lots of bugs.
Yeah, it's gross. Chewie's like, I'm not eating that shit.
Generously, some swamp fish.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, maybe it's some, like, catfish stew. That sounds good.
I think that's best case scenario.
Mushrooms, maybe some truffles growing in those trees.
Yeah, it just, everything in Dagobah seems disgusting. So,
probably some snake meat.
And so Han tells Luke that Leia's alive, which is interesting that, of course, they just assumed she had died. Because I guess if they just immediately took it to Dagobah, then they wouldn't have ever seen any broadcast about. But in 5 years, Han never heard anything about Leia if she was such a well-known figure.
Well, I mean, she was being kept as like the pet of the Emperor, right? So presumably they wouldn't let her make a public appearance before they knew she was properly on the leash.
My question then is that what has then taken 5 years? Is this now like a very recent return for her?
I would assume. Otherwise,
yeah,
I mean,
yeah, it's the only way it makes sense.
Otherwise, like, I don't take Han Solo as the guy who watches the nightly news, let alone the Imperial, like, propaganda broadcasts. So,
Chewie, turn it to my sitcoms.
Just Han and Louie and Barca Loungers watching their stories.
Oh, him and his antics. This Gungan and his antics. I assume it's
Jar Jar later in life became a sitcom star. Yeah. Yes.
Misa home, honey.
Audience applauses.
Yeah.
Oh, Jar Jar.
Yeah, well, they're not paying this guy enough, I'll tell you. He kills me. with his antics.
Now I'm just imagining a sitcom where Jar Jar is the dad, everyone else is played by a human, and he's like the awkward stepdad to a human family.
From the waters of Naboo to an apartment duplex on Coruscant. Little Gungan in the big city.
And his bar buddy that he goes out drinking with is just the Alf puppet.
Oh, yeah. It's literally just the puppet of Alf. It's exactly. Hey, Jar Jar!
Look, JJ, I know you got a rough time at home with the kids, but you gotta know they won't respect you if you just lay down like this.
I really want someone to just draw like a Cheers-esque thing of them at the bar, and they each have a stein of beer, right? And they're just sitting there, and Alf's like, hey! Please, if anyone with artistic skills and a lot of time on their hands, please send that in. The email's at the end of the show, so get rid. Yeah. So anyway, but sorry, back to the.
Sorry, the plot, right?
Well, this is what happens when we enter the world of infinities. Anything can happen. Let's see here. So they, Luke's like, I don't believe that. There's no way that's right.
No, Luke says, somehow I knew. I've always felt her presence.
Not possible. She can't be acting of her own accord. We have to leave now and get her out of there. This is also weird for Han. Like, what? And then Han's like, whoa, we can't do that. What did he want Luke to do?
I don't know. Yeah, here's the thing. Like, again, the crux of this, like, what the fuck is Han Solo doing in this issue? I don't know. Because, yeah, he says, look, I'm concerned about Leia as the next guy, but waltzing into the Imperial throne world seems like a really bad idea.
But you came here going, we have to do something about Leia. Then he's like, whoa, do something about Leia?
And,
Jesus.
Chewie cuts in with a grah, ronk, ronk.
And that's
and Han comes back with take it easy, since when did you become suicidal? So I guess Chewie's the one spearheading this operation.
I guess that's the case. Yeah, Chewie's out there going, I don't care if I die. Right is your friend, not ready are you for this. What the fuck you say, Yoda?
Yeah, even with 5 years straight of Jedi training, not interrupted by anything, Luke can still come back with a, but master, I passed the trial in the cave. I've completed my training.
Oh, back to whiny Luke right away. First sign of trouble, and this kid's whining again. Yoda's like, yeah, no, but it's just like, there's actually a super dark secret that I haven't been telling you. And you think about how weird it is that he didn't tell him that Vader was his father in Empire. The idea that they spent 5 years together and it never came up. Really? Come on.
Yeah, because Yoda and Luke go walking off into the woods as Yoda is trying to explain this to him.
Soul-crushing news over here.
Have I spoken of your father, Anakin? Yeah. How many times you have asked about him. Told you, that your father was a powerful Jedi. True, that was. Told you, did Obi-Wan, that Darth Vader murdered your father. True, that was not. Vader is your father.
Right, which, that impact is certainly lessened than Vader literally saying, I'm your father. But I also like that Luke, of course, says the same thing when we get to the next page. But, That kind of undercuts the whole concept that no, Vader did kill Anakin Skywalker, and you're just like, no.
I love the idea that Obi-Wan is the one who told Luke that, like, well, from a certain point of view.
Yeah.
And Yoda's rejoinders is like, no, Obi-Wan is full of shit. Yeah. You were lied to.
He just didn't want to have that awkward conversation.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely not that the guy who was writing this came to that decision point later.
Certainly not. How could it be? that's ridiculous. Why'd he even suggest it is preposterous. Yeah, and so Luke says, that's not true. That's impossible. With a different inflection, it's in the small type, which I guess is supposed to be more under his breath, which, of course, is much different than him shouting at an Empire. But still, it's, you know, I like that, at least, because that's like an echo.
And I do like Yoda's reasoning for this, though, when he says, the truth of your father would have only increased your impatience and your anger, and you know that's true.
Yeah. Come on, man. You were just whining a second ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, and he's like, oh, wait, I'm not done, though. Also, Leia's your sister. And Luke's like, oh, yeah.
Well, once he knows Vader is his father, then, that. Like, everything else sort of clicks into place, right?
I mean, that's similar to his reaction in Jedi, where he's like, oh, yeah. Because he's like, you have a sister. It's like, it's Leia, right? And Obi-Wan's like, yeah, yes. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, Luke in Jedi is kind of just like, that adds up.
Well, because he's got the connection to the Force, so he's got sort of an intuitive understanding of the connections between things. And also, in this version, he's literally had a vision of Leia's smoking face inside of Vader's helmet, so...
It's not the upsetting... Leia's the more upsetting line when she goes, somehow I've always known. You're like, why are you kissing him, then? That's weird. The visions is also clear now. We go to the next page. And then he's like, why didn't Obi-Wan do this? Like, why don't you ask his ghost? He's right there.
Yeah, Obi-Wan just showing up again out of nowhere. I wanted to tell you, Luke, but the danger to her would have been too great.
Let me explain myself.
Obi-Wan's explanation here is shaky at best, and Obi-Wan's always been one for shaky explanations.
Yeah, he goes, I wanted to tell you, but the danger to it into grid. Vader, well, Anakin, now that you know, I can say that. Never knew of her existence. I couldn't risk that knowledge falling into Vader's hands. Okay. That implies he knows the existence of Luke, though, right?
Yeah, and here's where this gets pretty shaky in terms of chronology on a canon level. And look, if you're not here for this sort of discussion, then why are you listening to this show?
That's literally the whole show.
When Vader learns about Luke Skywalker's existence has changed a couple of times over the course of Star Wars canon.
Yes.
It's generally accepted that post A New Hope is when Vader learns that this hotshot pilot named Luke Skywalker, who blew up the Death Star, is named Skywalker, which of course would tip Vader off on a couple of things.
That would be a pretty obvious clue right there.
Right. This book is sort of implying that he already knew.
Yeah,
because the definitive version that exists right now within canon is established in other Marvel Star Wars comics that were specifically in the Star Wars and in the Vader book that were being done right after the Disney acquisition.
Right, that stuff makes that like the crux of it. Right, is his discovery of that. That's such a huge part, which would make sense because obviously he learns that sometime in the interim, and there's a story there.
Right. And that, like, knowledge is also what sets Vader on the path to betraying the Emperor, right? Because it's like, this is something that the Emperor held from me. I thought I had burned my past to the ground, and there was still something of the love I felt for Padme that still existed in the galaxy.
Right, right. And that's all great. But, I mean, so I also like this thing, though, where he's like, he talks about, I couldn't risk her falling into Vader's hands. Then he's basically just like, but then that happened anyway.
But then that happened, right?
Yeah. My bad. Jesus Christ. Yeah, it's been brought up before that both Obi-Wan and Yoda, as great as they are, do have some shortcomings and make some key mistakes in the original trilogy. As much as I love them.
It's something, I mean, we talked about Last Jedi a little bit earlier, but it's something that I think that movie does is acknowledge the shortcomings of the old Jedi Order and their needs for this, like, dogmatic view of the galaxy and what secrets they're willing to keep that dogma going.
It's also something that's expressly clear if you've read Colin Trevorrow's script for Episode 9.
Yeah, well, look.
Talk about
the fits. That's the biggest what if.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be shocked if a comic book based on that script was published at some point in the same way that Star Wars was.
Yeah. Which we'll have to do that at some point and figure out where and how we want to talk about the Star Wars. Because that's an interesting little side quest thing.
Absolutely. What
if. Yeah. So Yoda's like, obviously the Emperor is looking to make Leia his apprentice.
Right. Because Yoda has a line here. Vader grows old. Many great wounds he has sustained. As the Emperor's successor, suitable he is not.
It makes sense, right? In Jedi, this is the case too. It's like, yeah, I mean, Vader's pretty awesome, but he is like a ramshackle put together cyborg. Wouldn't it be nice to have a full flesh and blood, like, guy at his peak?
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. And the Yoda line here of all along the Emperor has sought the son of Vader as his heir implies that the Emperor knew about Luke and Leia, or at least that he had a kid.
Lots of people knowing stuff that I'm trying to figure out, like, how. Because also, wasn't that the whole point of separating them so they wouldn't be found? And then this just makes it seem like pretty much everything they did was for naught.
And yeah, the idea that the Emperor knew all along that Skywalker had a scion that could be turned at some point seems like a reach. And again, we joked last issue about, like, well, look, if it goes the right way, the Emperor foresaw it.
I knew. That was me. Mm-hmm. Didn't I tell you? Somewhere, look in the notes. I said it somewhere. It's in there. Who has the time to look it up, though?
This feels like Yoda going, like, what can you do? He foresaw it.
Yeah. Oh, now you're buying into this, Yoda. Evidence there is. All right. So we turn the page here. Do we get... Oh, no, we don't ever get my favorite thing, which is ghost Obi-Wan sitting. I got to sit down.
I know I'm incorporeal, but whoa, these knees.
I'll come back as a ghost, George, but can I sit? Does that make any I don't care. I can't be standing for that long in a scene. I'm an old man. Luke's trying to figure out what to do. Of course, classic Obi-Wan, let the Force tell you. Aren't you part of the Force?
That's
pretty ill-defined, actually.
Yeah, we won't establish that fully until way later. Don't worry about it.
Everything's pretty vague right now. he's like, hey, I wish I could help you, but I can't. So literally, bye. <He's> like, <"Wait." laughs> Why is Obi-Wan waving so much in this book?
Look, he's just letting him know that, like, you got this, kid. Have fun storming the castle.
His classic hello there is now a goodbye there. Anyway.
I think it would be a so long there.
So long there. Yeah, that's a good one. And then Han's like, all right, are you done talking to that ghost? Let's get out of here and go do this thing. But Yoda's like, no, I'm coming too. You know what? This is an Infinities book. Yoda gets in on the action, which is a new concept. We haven't seen Attack of the Clones yet, which was... I distinctly remember having my mind blown in the theater when Yoda whips out that lightsaber.
Yeah, but I do like Yoda's line here of, and owe me you do for food you have eaten. I am thinking a ride in your vessel would be fair exchange.
Once again, like, I have issues with a lot of the broader strokes of this, but there are individual moments where I'm like, oh, that's such Yoda. That's a great Yoda line. People always focus on the wisdom of Yoda, but Yoda's a scamp.
Yoda is, yeah, this like little trickster goblin that shows up in Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that the prequel trilogies do wrong with Yoda is making him a little too self-serious. And yeah, they managed to like glom on some more of his mischievous aspects in Clone Wars stuff in the show.
Well, Clone Wars is nothing but trying to fix the prequels. That's like the
sure, whole show. Exactly.
Anakin's now an interesting character. I think
Obi-Wan has a tragic backstory.
Oh God, it's so good. That is an interesting thing about it. And I would say that's a general note to the entirety of the Jedi Council. They're just so fucking serious. Which they should have a gravity to them. But, I mean, I've always thought Mace Windu was another missed opportunity. Like, how do you not let Samuel L. Jackson be a little bit Samuel L. Jackson? Aside from, this party's over, which does rule.
I love that he was so constrained in those films that literally the whole character of Mace Windu in every other property is just like, well, he's the guy with the stick up his ass.
Yeah, that's the thing that's so interesting. And that's clearly all Lucas, right? And also just Samuel Jackson, I think, who just was, you know, such a Star Wars fan, just being like, hey, man, you point me in the direction and I'll do it. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to try to like bring myself to this as much as I'm going to be part of, you know, I'm going to give myself over to the vision of this. But it is sort of a thing where it's like, they can have a little more fun being Jedi. Like, I don't know. Jesus, I mean, like, I don't want to be. I as a kid, I wanted to be a Jedi. And I saw that, and I'm like, oh, I don't actually know, man. It seems kind of lame.
They're always holding up signs at me and asking me what I see, and they're being like, ah, oh, you can't do this.
Yeah, this kid sucks. So, yeah, Yoda's coming with them. And I also like this inset panel when we turn the page. Besides, long has it been since I have sat in the Temple of the Jedi. Many fond memories I have of my days on Coruscant. At least the couple that we have seen in context of the one movie. And then I like, once again, oh, the fully amassed Imperial fleet. Oh, so good.
Seeing this many Superstar Destroyers in one panel makes me happy. Just as like the spaceship nerd that I am. Of just
That's a real Venn diagram where our interests line up as spaceship design. And it's just like, it's a fleet of ships. that's good starship.
Yeah, and we get some more news broadcast here as it says, in conjunction with the Empire's recertification of the Senate comes an even more spectacular development.
Yeah, what's this? I actually, you know what? I'm hearing that voice in the narrator voice from Clone Wars. Conjunction, right? That sort of...
From this day forward, the seat of the government will travel throughout the Empire so that all worlds will be true equals in this grand new empire.
Right. Imagine a Star Wars news broadcast being like an old newsreel, more so than like a modern cable news broadcast. Because everything's kind of weirdly old-timey in Star Wars.
But this is the line that gets me in this issue.
Yeah.
And to mark this bold step in a new future, the newly christened Justice Star will pass across the face of the Coruscant Sun.
I also love that so much because it's like, well, PR guys worked on this and we've rebranded. Death Star is a bad look for what we're going for, right?
So,
it's so goddamn funny.
But lest we like skip over this a little bit, the newsreel here is implying that the new Imperial Senate will be on the Death Star as it moves around the galaxy.
That's right. Look, we've had two senators killed. Hey, man, where else do you discuss peace other than the Justice Star?
What if the Capitol building could blow up another country?
We're going to have all of our meetings inside of this nuclear missile now. you better hope we side with you on this. That's all I'm saying. It's crazy.
I love this idea, though, that like, okay, well, if you ever want to blow up the Death Star again, you will be killing the entire Galactic Senate.
I'm just saying, think some stuff through, you know? it's great, though. What is wrong? So the Emperor's, I like the line when they talk about Vader's getting old, but we also have the Emperor dying here.
Yeah, if because Vader has this line here, if only the Emperor had been well enough to be with us.
Mm-hmm. He's got a tummy ache. He shouldn't have had those burritos.
Again, it feels like we've got this weird reversal where it's like, Yoda's doing fine, but yeah, the Emperor's the one that's fading. So yeah, maybe it is like kind of a light-dark balance thing.
Yeah, that's an interesting read on it. Yeah, I mean, they're, like I said, that's definitely like a sort of unaddressed what if of this.
Mm-hmm.
But it is interesting, the idea of like, because, yeah, I mean, the Emperor is really old and decrepit and full of evil. by the time we get him in Return of the Jedi. So it is like, had he continued to reign over this, like, what was the successor plan is kind of an interesting thing to think about. Of course, I know there's expanded universe stuff that brings up clones and shit. And then obviously there's the pickle jars full of Snokes. But
well, okay. So here's the thing.
Yeah.
We have an answer for this. And yeah, the answer is, as much as we don't like it, provided by The Rise of Skywalker.
Yes.
The idea is that the Emperor, when his body dies, he finds something to put it into. Right. Whether that be a clone of himself, or a pickle jar full of Snokes, or his best case scenario was Anakin Skywalker before he got all machined up and busted.
Fine. Like that idea is interesting. The only problem is it really undercuts the Return of the Jedi. If that had been his plan that didn't work, the idea that, but what is he then in Rise of Skywalker?
He's an evil Sith ghost that has bound itself to a failed clone of Palpatine.
I guess that's the idea. And he's in the claw machine from the lobby of a Bennigan's. Thank you.
And his plan in that movie is to install himself in either Ben Solo or Rey's body.
Yes. Yeah. That's fine, I guess.
That's the evil plan.
Yeah.
I mean, it gets sillier from there once you start talking about fleets of Star Destroyers that all have Death Star cannons.
I think that's actually the bigger mistake. That's my bigger issue than him being alive and trying to put his consciousness in something else. That's actually fine.
That was the Team America World Police moment of like, it'll be 9/11 times 1,000.
That's it exactly.
It's the Death Star times a million.
That's right, because not only, we don't even need a full Death Star anymore. Now we can just miniaturize it and put it on this thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Sure.
But I like Evil Leia's line here, getting back to the book, at the bottom of this page, when she says, perhaps it's just as well, and Darth Vader asks why, and she says, it is the dawn of a new era. The future should be built by those who will live in it.
Yeah. That's, once again, that's key there, where it's like, that guy's gonna die, like, tomorrow, so...
Not to put too fine a point on it, but that line stood out to me because of a... certain geriatric presidential race that seems to be building up in the United States at this moment.
What's going on? What's this? I haven't heard about it. No. Just
look up the word gerontocracy and then we can have a longer conversation.
It is an interesting point that Star Wars has got its finger on the pulse more than they were aware.
In 2001.
Yep.
But we go to this page, this last page we have, as the Vader is left by Leia when she says she has much to attend to, and the Emperor just appears out of fucking nowhere.
Hello.
I was here the whole time.
And also, he doesn't seem to be dying. I mean, I don't know. Once again, he always is decrepit and full of evil once again. So I don't know. For a second, I'm going, oh God, is Vader just like lying about?
Yeah, he's totes about to die.
I mean, maybe a little bit, because the Emperor's line here is, her ambition makes her powerful. I am pleased. You, however, seem conflicted, apprentice.
Yeah, I don't like what you're up to. I'm getting a weird vibe from you, man.
And again, Vader's like, Master, I sense a disturbance in the Force. And Palpatine's like, Look, what you're sensing is how cool I am, okay?
How many times do we have to talk about this? You're sensing my awesomeness. It's everywhere. It can't be denied.
Yeah, he literally says, what you sense is the destiny I've put in motion, the extinguishing of the Jedi flame.
Remember, meanwhile, when we told you I foresaw it.
Yeah, totally foresaw all of this.
Yeah. Knew it the whole time, Vader. This is all going just according to plan.
Cut to the interior of the Millennium Falcon with an image I don't think I'll see anywhere else, which is Yoda riding shotgun behind Han Solo.
Really cool. Really cool to see. Let's see here. Yeah, so he goes, and once again, being snarky. When he goes, looking forward to the Emperor's celebration, I am.
Yeah, Yoda's going to have a celebration and some fireworks all his own in the last issue. Because, yeah.
Lightsaber up his ass.
Shit down his neck, I will.
Jesus, Yoda. God. Yoda plays hard, man. He plays for keeps.
Fuck around, Yoda does not.
Yeah. Find out when you fuck around.
But that is issue number 3 of Star Wars A New Hope Infinities. Again, a very abrupt ending as we have our heroes entering Coruscant.
It's the closest to a proper ending of any of these because it is like, okay, it's the climax is about to happen. But it's not perfect by any stretch of the imagination.
No. And with this third issue, we have our heroes properly positioned to be at the end of Return of the Jedi as Han, Chewie, Luke, and Yoda invading Coruscant.
It's the team you want, baby. there it is.
Of this remix so far, as we go into this finale, are there any characters you feel like we have skipped over in, say, Empire Strikes Back that might have been rolled into this in some interesting ways? I mean, the big one for me is Boba Fett, right?
Oh, wow. I was going to say the big one is Lando Calrissian.
Oh, also Lando, yeah.
Yeah, sure. Lando's, both of those are big. I did expect when the guys recognized him in the bounty, I expected Boba Fett to pop in somehow when those guys recognize Han Solo. Jabba the Hutt obviously comes to mind as well. We don't get anything with the return to... Less time on Tatooine. Is it even Star Wars?
My God, is this the first series we've read that literally has nothing on Tatooine other than a recap panel?
I think it might be.
Whoa.
Just doesn't feel right.
Feels weird. Feels off.
There's some interesting stuff in there that just gets skipped. I actually think, I don't know why you couldn't have had Han go to Lando after the thing. I mean, there's some missed opportunities in here. The much extended role of Yoda, though, I kind of like, and I like action hero Yoda.
I like this is the A-team, Yoda's the Hannibal, right? Yeah.
Love it, I do, when a plan comes together.
I just need Yoda with a big cigar now.
Wouldn't even have to be that big. It would just a regular size cigar would look gigantic on him.
Okay, Han is clearly face.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Chewie is BA. That makes Luke Mad Murdock, I guess?
Maybe Han is more Murdock and Luke is face?
Yeah, actually, that tracks.
That tracks. Because they're all... The problem with putting Luke in there is all the A-team are scoundrels. They're really a pure of heart guy. So, it's not a perfect thing, but I would
not a perfect one-to-one. Yeah,
Han is more howling Mad Murdock because he's the pilot. And Luke is the face man of sorts.
Right. Now that I have that in my brain, I can
I can enjoy this comic. All right. Now that I've sussed out how the A-team gloms onto this,
so long as I can hear da 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 as they fly into Coruscant,
that's what I imagine the entire last issue is scored to. So So, of course, if you want even more of this nonsense and more ramblings about pop culture. There's a lot over on our Patreon page. That's patreon.podbean.com/punchup. Once again, patreon.podbean.com/punchup. Get cool exclusive bonus content as well as help support all the shows on the Punch Up Entertainment Network.
Yes, of course. And if you want to get even more out of your Star Wars comic book show, you can come join us over on YouTube, the optimal way of appreciating this show, where you can read along with us and see our beautiful faces while we make distended versions of those faces while we look at some of this art in the...
Oh, no!
Again, in the audio, you don't know all the different faces I'm making, but over on YouTube, you can absolutely see me going through the whole Marx Brothers line of facial expressions.
Yeah, it really is worth worth checking out.
But while you're over there, please like, comment, and subscribe. Let us know in the bottom, in this particular remix of Infinities, what characters did you want to see showing up? Is the fact that Salacious Crumb is not going to make an appearance in this book really upsetting to you? Let me know down in the comments.
No, I don't miss that. but pour one out for my boy Bib Fortuna. But no, yeah, I think that's going to do it though, Grigoni.
Yes, indeed. And because of, as always, I've been Mike Grigoni.
I'm John Campbell.
And may the panel be with you.